Hear ye, hear ye, hear ye. The Supreme Court of the State of South Dakota, the Honorable David Gilbertson presiding, is now open for the transaction of any business that may legally come before it.
Good morning. This is the time and place set for our annual February rules hearing. We will proceed on the proposals as they were published in the notice in the State Bar newsletter. I would say that we have received a number of submissions in writing, which are permitted. The court has written and studied those, so those of you who are appearing today need not get up and read them in total. We've already studied those. If you want to say something in addition to that, that's certainly welcome. And with that, we will proceed. The first proposed rule, proposal number one, would amend SDCL 15.65. Any comments on that? Mr. Fulton, we have received your amended proposal, by the way, and it has been distributed to members of the court.
Justice, I guess my comments, Mr. Chief Justice, members of the court, I try and keep brief and explain why I proposed this rule and the reason I thought it was a good idea. We at one point in our office were involved in some litigation involving out-of-state attorneys, and we received a voluminous discovery request so that we didn't have to have support staff spend literally hours recreating those items. For our responses, we asked that they be provided to us in electronic form, either through diskette or email. We were rebuffed. We have not had that experience with attorneys in South Dakota, but we have had it a couple times with out-of-state attorneys. It's not to say it wouldn't happen with in-state attorneys, but I think the problem is more often with the out-of-state bar than South Dakotans. With the initial proposal I put together, my idea was to create something that would require folks to provide discovery responses in electronic form so we didn't have to spend time recreating them. In talking with some attorneys, there was some concern about my initial proposal being mandatory, and I submitted the follow-up that would make it much more like the admission of service rule, where if requested, someone would provide these items to you in electronic form, or else they'd be required to pay the actual costs, and the court would be allowed to impose terms if it was deemed appropriate. I think perhaps the second proposal would be better in another manner, and that's that at some point I suspect the Bar of South Dakota, much like some of the other jurisdictions in the federal courts, may move to electronic service and filing. It may be best to leave a mandatory rule for that larger approach to electronic service in general. So I think it may be better to take the second proposal. With that, I'd be happy to take any questions from the court.
So just to make sure, you're striking your original proposal and substituting the newer one you just filed.
I think, Mr. Chief Justice, the second proposal is probably better. I think there's more comfort out in the bar. I would recommend striking the initial and using the second.
Well, you certainly have the right to withdraw what you submitted, so. Any other questions from the bench for Mr. Fulton? If not, thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chief Justice.
Any further comments on proposal number one, Mr. Barnett?
Thank you, Mr. Chief Justice, members of the court. I've had an opportunity to review the substitute proposal from Mr. Fulton. It's consistent with the original intent. I can confirm that the bar commissioners took a look at this and virtually said, in their practices, the only people that wouldn't cooperate were out-of-state lawyers. I concur that perhaps it's premature to go with mandatory, but the new proposal, I think, is a giant step in the right direction. And since it is consistent, the Bar Commission does support the Fulton number two.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Barnett. Any further comments on proposal number one? If not, we'll proceed to proposal number two, which would amend 15.630, parent C. Any comments on that proposal? Being none, we'll proceed.
I just have one correction I probably should make. It's Mike. But right after the information that struck after the statute cite, the words as provided by law should be underlined, and I neglected to get that underlined in the copy I sent to Shirley. So that is new language.
That is new? All right.
That is new.
All right, and my understanding is this was brought to our attention by Senator Schoenbeck, who informed us that 15.643B doesn't exist anymore.
That's correct.
All right. Okay. Any questions from the bench for Ms. Sedbeck? Not. Thank you.
Thank you.
Any further comments on proposal number two? If not, any comments on proposal number three, a proposed amendment of SDCL 156654D? There being none, we'll proceed to proposal number four, proposed amendment to 16182. Mr. Barnett.
Thank you, Mr. Chief Justice, members of the court. Proposal number four, the guts of that are simply increasing from $100 to $200 as the fee for Pro Hoc Vici. It maintains the same split as we currently have with the court, half retained by the court for and UJS for its work, and the other half goes to the state bar. Although it's not dedicated, it's intended to offset the expense to the disciplinary board, which we as members all pay when we deal with out-of-state lawyers. By way, anecdotally, I'd note that in 2002, the Pro Hoc Vici fee raised $6,500, and last year, dovetailed very closely, $6,550.
Is that the total or your half?
That's our half.
Okay.
So UJS is getting a similar sum. South Dakota was one of the first states to adopt a fee to go along with the Pro Hoc Vici in the last, and we did that about 10 or 12 years ago. Since then, many other states have likewise done it, and most of those courts are establishing a fee in the $200 range. I can tell you we've had one case in the last 2 years that involved a disciplinary board investigation of a Pro Hoc Vici out-of-state lawyer. And while it didn't cost us out of pocket nearly as much, I can tell you that if we put a value on the disciplinary boards and the staff's time, it would have exceeded the $6,550 that we got last year. So we think it's timely. We don't think that our members ought to be subsidizing the disciplinary board investigations of out-of-state lawyers. And with that, I'll be happy to answer questions.
Have you had any complaints on the amount of the fee?
No.
Okay. Any other questions from the bench? No? Thank you, Mr. Barnett. Okay. Any other comments on proposal number four? Then we'll go to proposal number five, a proposal to amend SDCL 161820.2. Mr. Barnett.
Thank you, Mr. Chief Justice. Again, this rule comes from the disciplinary board with the approval of the Bar Commission. The currently all practicing lawyers have to file a trust account certificate, and it's the one document that, other than dues, that we require every year. And we have kind of shoehorned in several other requirements into that, both for the convenience of my staff and also for the convenience of our practicing lawyers. Right now, under the existing rule, they have to advise us whether or not they have insurance, malpractice insurance. We believe that there are practicing lawyers out there that are not, that do tell us the truth when they say they don't have insurance, but either neglect or are unaware of the corresponding subsections in 1.4 and 7.5 on making that disclosure to their client. So what the change does is require them to certify and represent to this court that they have made that disclosure to their clients of the lack of insurance. And secondly, by attaching a copy of that letterhead making the disclosure, we make sure that all our practicing lawyers who aren't insured have in fact made that disclosure.
So they got to give you a copy of their letterhead that says I don't carry malpractice.
Precisely, insurance. And that's all it does.
All right.
And I'll be happy to answer questions if there are any.
Questions for Mr. Barnett.
The assurance that they are to supply, is this as to every client? In other words, do they have to give the letterhead to every client they have? Or just post it in their office, or what?
No, the current rule requires that at the initiation of the attorney-client relationship, they must make that disclosure in writing, and it has to be on their letterhead. And in all further communications with that client, again, they have to use that letterhead that makes the disclosure at the bottom. Now they can have two sets of letterhead, one for the rest of the world, because it's other than arguably to the court and through the bar, we want to know that they're making that disclosure, but they don't have to make the disclosure to opposing counsel or anybody else. So they can have two sets of letterhead, this rule is going to ensure that they, in fact, have done that, that they have that second letterhead that they will be using with their client.
Any further questions for Mr. Barnett from the bench? No, thank you, Mr. Barnett. Any further comments on proposal number 5? Being none, we'll go to proposal number 6, proposed amendment to SDCL 1916-22. Any comments? And we have received several in writing and have read those. Any oral comments on number 6? If not, number 7, the proposed new rule designated as SDCL 1916-40. Once again, we've received numerous written comments and have read those. Any oral comments? If not, proposal number 8, it would not amend an existing rule, so it doesn't have a code cite as of yet, but what it would do is establish a UJS court records rule. Any comments on that? Ms. Sudbeck.
Thank you. Just as background information on this, this was a set of guidelines that's been in the works since 2001, sponsored by the State Justice Institute, the National Center for State Courts, and also the Justice Management Institute, working together on behalf of the Council of, or the Conference of Chief Justices and the Conference of State Court Administrators. After many drafts and public hearings, comment processes, in July 2003, the final draft was brought before the combined conference of the Chief Justices and the State Court Administrators at their annual meeting, and it did receive unanimous approval from that group. It's not meant to be a model policy, but it's meant to be guidelines to help state courts draft access policies to court records. And the reason this was even started as a project is the technological advances in electronic access to court records. Some states are completely electronic. Some states have them in some parts of their state, but not others. And so this was to help states draft some guidelines to assist with that new way of accessing court records. I'm here for any questions that you might have.
And to clarify, all this is a procedural rule. There are specific statutes in place already that says what is public and what is not for the most
part.
Thank
you. Yes. When we looked at this in the State Court Administrator's office and with the Chief Justice, we're not attempting to alter anything that's currently state law, either by case law or court rule. We were attempting to pull together for assistance and guidance of the clerks and also the public and the media what the rules are regarding access to court records in South Dakota. I've also contacted some of the original drafters of the policy to find out what states or how many states are starting to use this. And the most current information is there are 17 states that are in some form of the process of adopting, either revising their access policies based on these guidelines.
Okay.
We've had some suggestions on this. Have you seen those?
I have.
Okay. Do you have any comment on those?
I think some of the suggestions, did you want me to go through them one by one? I think some of the suggestions are good ones. Others, I think, are already taken care of with statutes and the laws that currently.
I guess I would. Let's see. Do we have anything other than from Tina Harrelson?
AG's office.
Okay. Have it in their own pile. Oh, yeah, they are. Okay. Yeah, I don't need anything from you in relation to the KG, but comment, if you would, on the suggestions that came from Tina Harrelson.
Okay. Well, I guess I don't have any comment on the first one. And you have those in front of you, so I can just run through them by number. The second one is regarding who has access under the rule. And I guess my comment to that is, under the statutes, access is not the same to every person under the rule. And, you know, this policy would not change that. This policy would just be citing to the statutes, and some of the statutes, especially in the abuse and neglect cases, indicate who has access to the rule and who doesn't, and not every member of the public has the same right of access. So these rules, these proposed rules, would certainly not take precedence over any statute or court rule or case law that's currently in existence. But the fact of the matter is, not every member of the public does have the same access to every record, and that's set out by statute. On number three, the definition of court record, the proposed amendment that the media suggests was taken from an early draft of the policy. Some of that language towards the end of their proposed amendment includes, relates to records that deal with operation of the court and court administration. And they're traditionally not part of the court record in South Dakota, so we're not trying to make them part of an open record with this policy. Again, we're trying to not alter what's already there. Number four, on definition of public access, the objection and the proposed amendment would take out the qualifying language that public access means public access unless otherwise prohibited by statute, court rule, or decision by a court. Again, we're trying to comply with the statutes and the court rules that are already there. Not every member of the public has the same right of access.
So you'd leave all that?
I would leave that, yes. Number five would insert the language, the existence of information in a court record to which access has been restricted will be publicly accessible. And that means if something has been taken from the record and is sealed, at least there would be a statement in the court record showing that there was something there and probably describing the document if it can do so without disclosing what the document contains. That actually I would support. I've talked to some clerks and circuit administrators. That's not uniformly applied in the state. There's no state statute that talks to that, but as a matter of practice, I haven't researched it thoroughly, but I think it might be a good idea and something that, you know, that you should consider. I think it would help the clerks too in looking at if somebody comes to the counter and wants to see a file before they hand it over. I'm sure they look through it, or some of them that I've talked to look through it before they just hand it over, and they would be able to see easily if there's something in there that ought to be taken out. I think it would just be clearer for everyone. And so as a matter of public policy, I guess I would agree with that. Number six. Let's see. Court records excluded. Part of this is talking about giving members of the public an explicit right to access, request access to excluded court information. And we did not put that in our proposed rule. And it is in the guidelines. And again, these guidelines are not to change any state law. They're for to use as a springboard. I didn't find that right in state law anywhere. I think the parties could always try and make that argument to a court, either before these rules are adopted or after, if they are adopted. But I didn't see that right by statute. So that's not, especially after it comes after a long list of these are the statutes that restrict access to these certain records, then to be able to put another rule in there saying you have a right to request access to these records, there's already a statute that says, you know, this is confidential. Then another suggestion in that same number six is that we would attach as an appendix a list or a copy of the full text of all of the statutes that are cited in the rule. Let's see, and they're cited at 4.30. The statutes are cited there so that the clerks or anybody who is interested in this will go to the statute. I certainly wouldn't be opposed to, you know, using that as an appendix. I think they have access to it in the hardbound volumes and also on the internet, but if it makes it easier for anybody, you know, looking at this document to see exactly what the rule is, I don't have any problem with that at all. I think that's probably a good idea. I'm sorry, I don't have any comments written down for number seven. And that's their last proposal.
Okay. Thank you. Any further questions for Ms. Sudbeck? Not, thank you.
Thank you.
Any further comments on this proposal?
Good morning. Diane Best from the Office of Attorney General. The office has filed comments with respect to this rule, and as you indicated, you've looked at them. I don't need to go through them unless you have specific questions regarding any of these proposals.
No, I think they're pretty self-explanatory, and you did a good job in your written proposals saying why you thought they were needed.
Thank you. And the other thing is, I will point out on behalf of the Attorney General that we very much appreciate the fact that the court is going through this process and clarifying what's public and what isn't. We get inquiries from time to time, and people need to have the certainty of knowing what is public and what is not, and I think that this is a very good process. Once the rules are completed, we've got a website on public access already, and what we would like to do then is to put a link to the court's public access.
Sure, it's public record.
So I appreciate that. The other thing that I would just bring up this morning is with respect to the AAP's proposal. Their proposal number three talks about the definition of court record, and as Lynn pointed out, some of these other kinds of things that the AAP is proposing are not necessarily court records. They wouldn't be in the clerk of court's files. But there are some things in that group of records that are already public and would not be problematic to have made public, and we certainly wouldn't resist that effort. One specific thing I can think of is that the briefs are usually not filed as part of the clerk of court's records.
I thought they were. They don't come up here, but they're filed at the circuit court level.
No.
Are they?
No.
Okay.
At least some circuit courts do not put them in a separate file beside the docket in the file cabinet.
I think
some do file them. So.
I think the current rules don't allow the clerks to do it.
Okay.
Okay.
So anyway, my point is that briefs wouldn't be part of a court record, but they certainly would be something that probably ought to be public. And the same would go for the documents, which maybe the best way to describe it is formerly known as docket book.
Well, but if they're not filed, how can they be a court record? I mean, they're public, but they may not be a court record then, right?
They would not be a court record, and if the purpose here is to describe what court records ought to be public,
it appears that's what the definition is.
Yeah, it wouldn't properly be part of this rule, and I wanted to point out that we certainly wouldn't resist having those other records be made public. That's already part of the court's process.
Sure. I just don't want to confuse the definition of court record if indeed now they're not being filed. That was my only thought. Anything else?
Okay, I have nothing else. Okay. Thank you for your time.
Thank you for participating. Any further comments on this proposal? Ms. Haraldson.
Good morning, Mr. Chief Justice and members of the court. I'm Tina Harrelson. I'm the Chief of Bureau for the Associated Press for North Dakota and South Dakota. I'm not going to go over all these again. I just want to explain how this came about. We are very interested, of course, in court records and processes because of our news coverage duties. And when we saw in the bar newsletter that these proposed changes were being published, we decided to look into it a little further. And we noticed a couple of things that we thought would affect our ability to report stories. So I asked John Arneson in Sioux Falls to help me kind of go through, not being a lawyer, I needed some assistance in going through and just trying to understand what the proposals were. In the process of doing that, we went on the internet and got this model policy for public access to court records, which I believe is what these were drawn from. And in going through this, we just noticed some areas where we liked the wording better in the model policy, or we felt some things had been removed in the editing process because the South Dakota proposal is considerably shorter than this one. This one has an awful lot of stuff in it about internet access and stuff. So that's really where our proposals came from. It's just simply cases where the wording in the model policy was preferable to us for specificity and for other reasons. I understand technically the points that Lynn made about the definition of what is a court record, and we're not trying to change the technical definition of what's a court record or what's in a case file. We simply felt that list of items are items that we think should be public. If that doesn't fit in the rule the way you're drafting it, or this is not the proper place for it, you know, we respect that, and we certainly are not insisting. We're not telling you how to write your rule, but we are very concerned about those items being public. My main concern is at the end here in 4.60. I think Lynn said she would have no objection to the idea that if something is excluded, we at least should know that a document has been sealed. It just seems like that is a basic request, and that did come out of the model policy. And the other thing is that when the public does make a request for access to information in a court record, item number 7 there lists what the court may restrict public access upon considering these elements. And it appeared to us in the draft that it left the 4 elements regarding privacy and reasons not to open the rules, but it took out the 7 that were pro-access elements: maximum access to courts, effective judiciary, government accountability, public safety. We would just like to see those items included in that test to balance individual privacy and the other 4 elements. And those did come directly out of the model. So anything that we discussed or included in here came from our research of what the model policy had recommended. Any questions for me about the... Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Let me ask one thing.
Sure.
On number 3, the language that you proposed to add to the definition of a court record, are all those things in the model?
Yes. That's where we got them. But the model may have come at that from a different direction. I'm not sure that it's exactly drafted, introduced the same way, because I think you're talking about what's in a case file
right. That
should be open, and we're talking about other items affecting our coverage of courts that we think should be
right.
open.
I don't think there's any state in the country where you open the actual court file and you're going to find the court reporter notes in there.
Mm-hmm.
And what we did... Ms. Sudbeck and the people that drafted it was to try to fit that
to what's in our case file.
A clerk of courts has a court file, and those court reporter notes are not going to be in there.
And I'm not informed enough on this to know if we have code that says the docket will be open, that says the budget of the court will be open, that says, you know, I mean, I think certainly we don't disagree that those are public record. And if it's inappropriate for them to be in this definition, I accept that.
Yeah, our budget's in the annual report, which is public. It's on, in fact, it's on our webpage, but it's not a court file.
Right, not a
case
file.
That you can get from a clerk of courts.
Yeah, I understand that.
Okay. Any other questions?
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, the next proposal. That's it? Okay. Mr. Barnett, did you wish to comment on the last one, or anybody else?
No, thank you, Mr. Chief Justice.
All right. If not, thank you for your comments. The court will consider those along with the written proposals, and will be issuing the new rules in the near future. Thank you. We're in recess.